Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
It's 7 a.m. on Tuesday in Beijing, 8 a.m. in Seoul. And here in New York, it is 6 p.m. Monday evening. I'm Richard Quest. Whatever side and the dateline you are on, this is your first move. And a very warm welcome to First Move. This is your need to know. The U.S. Supreme Court keeps former President Donald Trump on the ballot. Malaysia may renew the search for missing flight MH370. It's 10 years since it vanished, with 239 souls on board. And also,
does it feel safe right now?
No.
Does it?
No, yes, sir.
CNN is on the ground inside Haiti. Violence is engulfing the country's capital. We have that and so much more. First, we begin with the huge legal victory for Donald Trump. The U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that the former president should remain on the ballot in Colorado, saying no state can disqualify a federal candidate on its own. Donald Trump has called the decision a win for the country.
You cannot take somebody out of a race. The voters can take the person out of the race very quickly, but a court shouldn't be doing that, and the Supreme Court saw that very well. And I really do believe that will be a unifying factor.
Jessica Levinson's with me, professor of law at Loyola Law School. Now, you know, look, the Supreme Court said that the Colorado Supreme Court was wrong, that the states did not have the right to remove a federal official or a candidate for a federal official. But essentially, that's where the nine members agreed and then probably went in their own directions.
That's exactly right. The top of the line is where you get that unanimous decision. It was styled as a per curiam, meaning there's no specific author. It's by the court. And then it just kind of fractures and falls apart after that, where you have the majority saying, and here's how you do enforce that part of the Constitution, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, that says if you engage in an insurrection, maybe you shouldn't serve in office again. And the liberal wing of the court saying, why are you answering that question? Nobody asked it, and you're answering it in a dangerous way.
But it's not unusual for the court to expound, particularly on a major constitutional issue like this, as to how the Constitution is supposed to work. This is politics underneath, liberal versus conservative at the end of the day. The liberals saying, whoa, you're tying the hands of the court for any future action. Are they right?
So I think that the liberals were right, not that you're tying the hands of the court, but that you might be tying Congress's hands. And I have to say, honestly, I found the liberal concurrence, which really means more like a dissent, as frustrating in the sense that they didn't come right out and say, and here's what we're worried about. But in rereading the opinion, I think what they're really worried about is that there's a situation where somebody like the former president maybe wins at the ballot box, but then Congress, under a different statute, something called the Electoral Count Act, tries to say, we're not going to certify the election because we think he's an insurrectionist. Their question is, does the majority opinion allow for Congress to do that, not to certify the vote? And I think what the liberals are really arguing here is it prevents Congress from taking that type of action when the liberals believe that that should be open to them.
We are deep, deep into the weeds of constitutional and electoral law here. On a more basic question, whether or not, if he becomes a convicted felon, he can still stand. So none of this has any effect of that, and he can still serve.
That's right. We are talking about one part of the Constitution, this post-Civil War era part of the Constitution that was meant to prevent members of the Confederacy from serving in government. We are not talking separately about those criminal cases. That's an entirely different track. That's happening in a criminal court. And as you pointed out, there's nothing in the rest of our Constitution that says if you're a convicted, even felon, if you've been convicted of arguably an insurrection, that you cannot serve as president again.
I read the opinion. Thankfully, it was only 30-odd pages, so there wasn't too much to plow through. But when you read it, are we gearing up for more conservative versus liberal, whether it be at the court or elsewhere? Is there not a sort of a depressing reading in this opinion that there can be no meeting of minds on any issue other than the headline number?
I just wrote a column and my subtitle was "The Court Can't Keep It Together." They can't even keep it together when they agree. And as you point out, it is depressing. And I think it shows the distrust of the members of the court. And I think it shows that they can't come to a consensus, even on this big issue of legal and political importance. They can agree only on that headline, basically the tweet, right? Which is Colorado went out of its lane. It went past its discretion and it doesn't have this constitutional power. And then the rest of it is the somewhat typical division between the conservative and the liberal court. I think it would have been so impactful and helpful for the legitimacy of the court if they could have spoken with one voice throughout. And we've had the court do that in the past. That's not this court.
Adaba, Jessica, you're aware that would have required either the conservatives not to go that one step further or the liberals to have sucked it up.
Well, that's right. And I think that's what, there was one justice who kind of stood alone, and that was our new justice, Amy Coney Barrett. And she said, basically, yes, I wouldn't have gone as far as the majority, but liberals, why are you complaining this loudly? Like, just whisper a little bit. Don't complain this loudly. And then people won't look behind the curtain and see that the Supreme Court is deeply fractured.
I was just trying to see if I could find her comments, because they were very powerful. She basically said, "A plague on all your houses." Thank you very much. Good to see you, Jessica. Nice. Thank you very much. The White House says the US Vice President Kamala Harris expressed her deep concern about the humanitarian conditions in Gaza. It was at a meeting with the Israeli War Cabinet member Benny Gantz. He's visiting Washington. The Vice President is also calling on Hamas to accept the terms of a hostage release deal in exchange for an immediate six-week ceasefire. As one of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's main political rivals, Gantz's visit is causing controversy back home. And officials told us Gantz does not represent the Israeli government on this trip. Jeremy Diamond joins me now from Tel Aviv. Is there a legitimate reason that he's there, or is he just mischief-making?
No, there certainly is a legitimate reason. I mean, he's looking to bolster support for Israel's war effort in the United States, Israel's number one ally. He also, of course, wants to ensure that the United States is doing everything it can to try and work to secure this ceasefire deal and the release of Israeli hostages. But of course, beyond that, there are also some of his own political aspirations perhaps at play here, because Benny Gantz is currently more popular than the current Israeli prime minister. If elections were to be held today, he would likely become the next prime minister of Israel. He knows, of course, that the United States is going to be a key partner for Israel going forward. And so all of that, of course, is at play for the United States as well. They have also watched repeatedly as Netanyahu has kind of stuck his finger in President Biden's eye as he has been trying to move forward with a plan to establish a Palestinian state in the aftermath of this war. And so the White House is also certainly looking to see how Benny Gantz would line up as in terms of a partner for the day after the war in Gaza. So all of that very much playing a part. But of course, there's no question that the critical timing of this visit is what's most essential here. Less than a week to go until the start of the month of Ramadan. Gantz himself has said that that is the deadline to achieve a hostage deal. If not, he has said that the Israeli military will move forward with a full-blown offensive into Rafah, that southernmost city in Gaza. And at this hour, we're getting reports that Hamas is saying that it cannot provide what Israel has been demanding in order to move forward with these talks. And that is a list of the hostages that they would release under the ceasefire negotiations. As a member of Hamas's political bureau telling us that they are in different locations with different factions, speaking of the hostages, and that there is no way to know their fate until the bombardment stops. Richard.
Jeremy Diamond in Tel Aviv. Grateful, sir. Thank you. Ukraine's prime minister says the country's military forces are constantly working on building up their defenses following Russia's gains in the east. Kyiv has declared a new defensive line after losing control of the former Ukrainian stronghold of Avdiivka, and that since that line has come under heavy Russian assault. Ukraine is taking responsibility for an explosion on a bridge in southwestern Russia. The blast brought railway traffic to a halt on Monday. The Russian advances are following as Ukrainian troops ration ammunition on the front line. CNN's Nick Payton Walsh reports.
It's a lonely path ahead. The Russians have never been louder or closer. Occupied Bakhmut is just up the road. But now, some Ukrainian tank guns are silent just when they're needed most. Here, they don't have enough shells.
Sometimes they just won't fire at all. For a whole day, other days, they'll be shooting constantly. And I tell you, it is loud on the other side of that hill, and it's sort of surreal. To hear that sort of noise over there and see this tank unit having to ration their ammo.
Без зброї люди є, але без зброї, ну, ми самі, це не ті війни, що коли з мечем чи шаблею ми могли щось зробити.
We learned they didn't fire at all that day, or the day before, or the next day. The silence here is what losing sounds like. So too is what these soldiers had to say.
Если американцев не рішат, вам давать деньги, що буде?
Я думаю, що ми всі загинемо просто. Оті, хто тут зараз є, нас не буде.
Is this the worst you've seen it?
Yeah, definitely. I think this year is going to be the worst year in the war. Well, I do know that there's certain units that they're running out of tanks.
How angry does it make you?
Yeah, I'm pissed. I'm absolutely pissed off. There's no point in trying to paint this in any sort of light where it's good for us that Russia takes Ukraine. That's going to be very, very, very bad for us geopolitically.
It's here, Chasiv Yar, that already looks like defeat. Those left sounding like they'd be just about okay when Russia comes.
Я хочу внучку видеть в Москве, внучка. Сестра в Калининграде. Да пол, честно, пол России. Там мои родственники. Но я здесь один.
Воды нет, газа нет, света нету, ничего нет. Отъедьте от дома. Они подъезжают прямо к домам, там, где живут люди, и стреляют прямо возле дома. Они прячутся за спинами мирных жителей.
Further south, near Avdiivka, homes that dealt with about 10 years of war just up the road are finally emptying out.
Знаете, уже дом 4 раза потрясло. Я думаю, ну, он же саманный. Я думаю, ну развалится. А потом дурак так стреляет, что думаешь, все, приехали. Поэтому и самое страшное, что сюда не зашли эти. Орда, потому что, ну, нема довіри до людей, які, у яких руки в крові, понимаете?
The skyline is bleak enough as it is, but now rumbles with Russia advancing. Ukraine said it would hold steady at three villages near here after it left Avdiivka. That hasn't happened. All three are now heavily contested at best, and the noise of the Russian approach is louder.
У нас же була ж Донбас, Україна, все нормально, жили. Робота була. Зараз уже, конечно, мені скоро 70. Уже 52 года в місті. Ну, тут, вот тут їх поховають. Вон канава у нас яка, бачите?
Ви совсем ожидали, що у русских тут так близько?
Не, ми не ожидали такого. Ми думали, оно как-нибудь успокоится, что и затихнет.
Some units had enough shells, they said. These firing American rounds in a donated Paladin. But still less than before. We didn't see much in the way of heavy defenses around here. And the worry is, was, and will be that Russia does not stop. It may not be huge and sudden enough to make the West pay urgent attention. But that's exactly what Putin wants anyway. Nick Payton Walsh, CNN, Chasiv Yar, Ukraine.
And so it's one of the most perplexing mysteries in aviation history, and it's a story so close to my heart that you wrote a book about it, The Vanishing of Flight MH 370, and it has been 10 years this week since the 777 disappeared. Now the Malaysian government says it might take up the search once more. We've never really got to the bottom of what happened to the Boeing 777. It's hoped that locating the wreck will provide answers once and for all and bring closure to the families and friends of those on board. Now, as I lay out in the book, there is overwhelming suspicion that the captain was on a suicide mission, if you will, and down the flight. But I do conclude it would be unfair and irresponsible to apportion blame right now because we just don't know. So a US-based exploration firm is proposing a fresh search on a no-find, no-fee basis. Its own Ocean Infinity. Two previous attempts failed. Their license wasn't renewed. Now they're coming back and having another go. Miles O'Brien is with me. I don't know whether you're shuddering or delighted at the prospect that we're talking again about this, Miles, after so many years. But one has to assume that Ocean Infinity believes new technology means they have a better chance of locating the wreckage than previously.
Yeah, Richard, as you well know, the technology has progressed quite a bit in the past decade. What Ocean Infinity has in its arsenal didn't really exist back in 2014 when we were first talking about this. They have fleets of autonomous underwater robots that can perform a much more comprehensive and efficient search than ever before. If you'll recall, back in the day, they were towing devices along. And it was certainly, well, needle in a haystack doesn't do any of this justice, of course. And given the fact that we really don't know where to begin on this search, it still is a rather Sisyphean task, perhaps. But the technology has improved, and so I think it's worth trying, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. On a no-fee, no-find basis makes it. But what was interesting, of course, is that the previous, well, if we look at Malaysia's government, and their refusal to renew leases and searches, there's almost a new willingness in a way. The minister himself said, we need to find out what happened.
Well, as you well know, there's a long history of countries that operate airlines who have crew people who have been put in suspicion for murder-suicide attempts. I'm thinking of Egypt Air 880, for example, or Silk Air. There are others where the government would prefer that story not get out. So it is possible that there are people within the Malaysian government who fear that if, in fact, the captain was responsible for this, that that story might get out. But I would submit to you a couple things. First of all, the families are owed some sort of knowledge of what happened. And secondly, even if they got to the wreck tomorrow, I'm not sure that would really solve the mystery. Are you?
Well, that depends on the black box recorder, doesn't it? and being 30,000 feet down, along with other things. I've got in front of me, Miles, I don't know if you can see, just some of the reports, the factual information, the transcripts, the search and debris examination that we all went through during that period. A lot has changed. I mean, the reporting requirements of aircraft over water flights without radar, et cetera, et cetera. So to some extent, it couldn't really happen in quite the same way again. But the level of mistakes and dropped balls and that took place during 370 was really quite breathtaking. We would never have, if you'd said in advance, oh, air traffic control won't follow up for hours. Oh, this wouldn't happen. Oh, that, we would have said, well, not likely.
We know that term we use, Richards. It's layers of Swiss cheese, right? You buy those sliced Swiss cheeses, and every now and again, you get a hole that goes all the way through. And that's kind of what leads to what we, you know, an accident in aviation. Every now and again, all of that kind of stacks up and you get that hole through the cheese. And this is a classic example of that. But it does, in my view, make it seem much more likely that it was, in fact, a deliberate act, because it did thread a lot of needles, didn't it?
You've just got to, that was going to be my last question to you, Miles. I'm not prepared to go. Look, I'm not a fool. I mean, I can see that Occam's Law, et cetera, does lead to Captain Zahari, but I just don't think we're there.
Well, it's you know, I'm a pilot. I'm reluctant to impugn an individual and a pilot who's not here to defend himself. But you and I, we've talked about this at length in the green room and on the air. And it's very difficult to come up with a scenario, as you know, where you have this sudden disappearance and at the same time an aircraft that flies on for double-digit hours. Those two things just don't go together. And so it's very difficult when you get beyond that idea to come up with another scenario.
I think we can both agree that we hope this search goes ahead. And if and when it does, you and I will be talking about it many more times, Miles. I'm grateful, sir.
Indeed we will. There's another book to be written, Richard.
Oh, no. I've still got the scars of the last one. Thanks, Miles. Miles O'Brien joining me. Coming up, this is First Move from New York. China's surprising move. It's dropping the Premier's news conference at this year's annual parliamentary meeting. Also, surging travel demand in Asia and ambitious expansion plans. Tony Fernandez will be with me, the CEO of the AirAsia Group. He's next, coming up.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number smart beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support. Your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number smart beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life.
I'm a health reporter and have been for 15 years. And even I feel overwhelmed by some of the things I read about the stuff we're eating.
My colleague Meg Terrell wanted to take a deep dive into something you've probably heard a lot about recently. Ultra-processed foods. There is a lot to learn there, some fascinating stuff. And some of it is probably going to change the way you shop. Listen to Chasing Life, wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, that First Move, and a good morning if you're waking up to us in Asia. In today's Money Move, US stocks closed just a couple of hours ago in the red. Alphabet, Amazon, Meta, and Microsoft all lower. NVIDIA was the exception. There's the QNB bell. It gained another 3.6%. Bitcoin is now over $68,000. approaching its record high from 2021. China's biggest political meeting of the year will begin in only a few hours. It's happening as the world's second largest economy has so many challenges. A property crisis that mounts across local government debt as well. There's also a major change this year. Beijing says the country's premier will not hold a news conference. It scraps a tradition going back three decades. Michael Hairston joins me. He's the head of China research at 22V, a special firm specializing in investment strategy. The way I read it, we all found those press conferences very useful because they gave us an insight that the formality of the set piece speeches didn't give us. So it's a regret that they've gone.
I think it was really the only time of the year when the domestic audience and international audience had that kind of relatively candid discussion coming from the Chinese official charged with managing the economy. And I think it's unfortunate and, you know, really counterproductive from Beijing's standpoint that they're not holding that press conference this year.
What are you expecting from this Congress? I mean, yes, it's rubber stamp, but it's probably not even that. What is the issue here? It goes to the ability of China to decide whether to go for more growth, whether to restrain growth, to deal with the debt crisis. What do you see as the issue here?
That's right. This is the meeting where they lay out the key economic targets for the year. And as you said, this is an economy that's going through some really difficult times, especially the downturn of the property sector. And there are a lot of calls for Beijing to do more stimulus, do more to boost confidence, boost domestic demand. I think it's going to underwhelm on that front. I think China's leadership has been very clear. They don't want to do a lot of stimulus, and they're very focused on goals that have more to do about changing to a new growth model than about stimulating the economy. So I think from a markets perspective and a private sector perspective, this meeting is not going to rekindle a whole lot of confidence.
Right, but that new growth model is what?
That's a growth model that's less dependent on the property sector and really focused on the areas that Beijing sees as keys to the future. And that's a lot of that is advanced manufacturing. It's clean tech, meaning electric vehicles, batteries, solar, it's semiconductor, really, that has economic importance, yeah. but also geopolitical importance, particularly in terms of China's rivalry with the US.
I'll thank you, sir. We are having some trouble with the line there, but I'm grateful. We heard what you said. Thank you. I appreciate it. Spring is only a few weeks away. It might not feel like it to you in East Asia, where winter hangs on like a bad cold. Chad Mars is with me.
Like a bad cold. That's me too. Just a bad cold. Hey, Richard, you know, I mean, 8, 6, 5 degrees, sure. You would love it to be 12, 15, 18, and it's just not going to get there. So all of China and even parts of Japan will stay well below normal for this week. But there is much warmer air lurking for next week. So just put through the next 7 days and say, hey, this is what we're looking forward to. Yes, you're going to see some snow again in Japan, likely 30 to 40 centimeters in those ski resorts, really, just to the west of Tokyo, if you can get on a train. But here's the cold air, cool, we'll call it, close to normal, but not quite. But notice that, way out there, that is headed your way. We go from the single digits all the way up to 18 by next week in Shanghai. We warm up again in Seoul a little bit, but this is going to take another day or two to get there. Tokyo, a cold rain for you on Thursday, a high of only 7. A cold, wet, windy rain that you might just want to stay home for. Now here's the rain down to parts of Australia. This is not cold. This is warm and very thunderstorm-filled rain. And we could see spots with 150 to 250 millimeters of rainfall, and that could cause flooding even in places that are in the middle of very large droughts. When the ground is very dry, it doesn't soak in very fast because it's just a big crust. So the rain doesn't soak into the ground. Even though sometimes there's cracks in the ground, it doesn't go very far. Temperatures, though, Melbourne, very nice for you. How about 29 degrees and even up toward Brisbane? We'll go 28. Lots of partying going on this week here in Australia for the festivities of this week, Richard. So we'll take very nice weather. Just try to keep the rain away.
Chad, here in New York, torrential rain on Saturday. Absolutely. Yes. I mean, biblical flood stuff.
Right.
Sunday, not a cloud in the sky.
Not a cloud.
Not a cloud in the sky.
Yes, I know. That's just how it went. That front went right on by you and took everything away, took the humidity away, and it was a very nice Sunday. It really, truly was.
Ah, it was extraordinary. Thank you. I'm very grateful. Thank you. Thank you. That's Chad Myers there. Always reminds me of that phrase, you know. Whether the weather be hot or whether the weather be cold, we'll weather the weather, whatever the weather, whether we like it or not. Back in a moment.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to First Move, a look at the international headlines as we move forward. Donald Trump can stay on the Colorado ballot and elsewhere. It's the ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court. But Monday's ruling has skirted a key allegation against the former president, namely whether he engaged in insurrection by inciting the January 6th Capitol Hill riot. The ruling is unrelated to the four other criminal cases against Donald Trump. The US and South Korea began their annual joint military drills on Monday. This year's exercises focus on deterring North Korea's nuclear threat. The North Korean leader Kim Jong-un ordered the military last year to prepare for war, and his defense ministry has called these latest joint drills reckless, urging them to stop, according to state media in Pyongyang. A large-scale police operation is taking place at a hospital in Germany. It's understood a 65-year-old woman has barricaded herself in a room. Police have told CNA it's unclear if any other patients are with her. France has become the first country to enshrine abortion rights into its constitution. The amendment was officially adopted during a joint vote held at Versailles. President Macron said the country would formally celebrate it later this week on International Women's Rights Day. Japan's Prime Minister Kishida Fumio is set to address a joint meeting of the US Congress on April the 11th. Congressional leaders say the visit will symbolize both nations' commitment to peace and prosperity. The UN says it is alarmed by the deteriorating security in Haiti's capital, Port-au-Prince. Surging gang violence in the troubled nation has reached a head in recent days. Thousands of inmates escaped from the country's largest prison over the weekend. Heavy gunfire has been reported near the airport, and there are political implications. The head of one gang said on Friday he would try to oust the country's prime minister. CNN's David Culver now reports from Port-au-Prince.
So we're like a block away?
Yeah.
It's as close as we can get driving. So we layer up and walk.
Oh, yeah. You can already smell it. Wow, look at people just still making their commute as tires are burning right in the middle of the street here.
No police barricade, no firefighters. Most seemingly unfazed. These flames have been burning for several hours. Haiti has been engulfed in turmoil for years.
We don't have a home to live in. We don't have food to eat. That's what they're shouting.
Many here now fear their country is on the brink of exploding.
Does it feel safe right now?
No.
It doesn't.
No, desert safe. My country is broken right now.
These folks blame the current government and Prime Minister Ariel Henry, appointed following the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse in 2021. They want Henry to go, but he says he's not yet ready to step down. This as panicked street shootouts like this one have become a near daily occurrence. it's often a clash between police and the gangs, which have essentially taken Haiti hostage. They flaunt their weapons and wealth on TikTok, threatening police and basking in lawlessness. Many residents now living behind barricades.
This is not the gangs doing this. This is the folks that live in these neighborhoods who are putting these up to prevent gangs from coming in and kidnapping.
Using whatever might stop or slow the kidnappers. Efforts to protect families and preserve innocence. That innocence shattered for others. This 14-year-old says he was recruited by a gang at 11. Tells me he's often forced to burn the bodies of those killed by other gang members. I want to change my way of life, he says, with a heavy look of shame. At an early morning food distribution, we meet dozens of women who have felt the wrath of gang violence. At times, we notice a lost stare in their eyes.
All of them have been victims. So there's nobody here who has not been a victim.
This woman's sister, shot and killed. This one's husband, burned alive inside their home. This woman tells us she was raped. She shows us the marks left behind. In recent months, gangs have seized more and more control over this country, including the roads leading to Port-au-Prince. Officials estimate that gangs now control as much as 80% of the capital. Even the U.S. Embassy and International Airport are mostly surrounded by rival gang territories. It's led the Haitian National Police to create an undercover unit. We go with them to the front lines.
This unit actually goes into gang areas, looks for gang members, and fights them.
The officers ask us not to reveal our exact location. And they tell us to work quickly, given we're standing exposed on a windy hillside.
As police have described it to me, basically everything behind me is occupied by the gangs. It's under their control. There are homes all around us. We're standing on the foundation of one home that had been abandoned.
They offer to drive us closer.
And you can see they're getting ready.
Yes, our driver's all geared up now, ready for potential gunfire to come our way. Stay away from the windows as we come in here. They describe this as the last defensive point, and beyond here is what they consider to be their front lines.
From here, you can see the battlefield. No signs of any suspected gang members, for now. Police are not the only ones trying to gain the upper hand here. In a fractured state, alternatives to the gangs and government surface. We're headed to meet a commander of BSAP, Haiti's Armed Environmental Protection Agency that has splintered from the Henri government, challenging its legitimacy. We pull up to a gated compound. The man in the purple shirt leads us in. He then changes into his BSAP uniform. It's the commander. He's in hiding from police. His message echoes the anti-government protester.
Toute révolution.
He flexes BSAP's strength in numbers and its potential to help bring stability. But when it comes to his own family?
You mentioned you have four kids. What do you think their future is in this country?
He fears their future is best served leaving Haiti. The desperation is felt beyond Port-au-Prince. In places like Jeremy, the UN chopper is the safest way to get there. It's about an hour ride. Members of the World Food Program take us through this rural coastal community, devastated by recent protests.
Right back there, you had five people were killed last week.
Right there?
It was right there, yeah.
We arrive at this agricultural consortium. The WFP buys food from these local farmers to then hand out. But the recent protests have blocked distribution efforts, leaving some food to spoil. It's frustrating for the WFP officials. As they know, you don't have to look far to find hunger here. These farmers pointing to their stomachs, lifting their shirts to us.
And you're hungry? A lot of folks will look at Haiti and they'll say, it's had issues for so long. The question that no doubt people in the U.S. will ask is, well, why should we help?
Well, there are two reasons why you need to help. First of all, it's on humanitarian grounds. But then there's also our own self-interest in the U.S. So the longer you wait to act on Haiti, the more migrants there will be on our southern border. It's that simple.
Many here search for normalcy where they can. Even with the threat of violence, missing mass for some is not an option. They wear their Sunday best and unite in prayer. Places of worship are not immune from gang terror, but they at least offer a moment of tranquility and hope for now. David Culver, CNN, Port-au-Prince, Haiti.
David Culver reporting. In a moment, Tony Fernandez is with me, one of the most recognizable figures in the aviation industry. And there he is. We'll be talking to Tony after the break about why he's launching his SPAC, if you will, on the US market. Tony, with a second. Welcome back. Tony Fernandez of AirAsia says he's never been so bullish about air travel as post-pandemic demand for travel outstrips supply. With that in mind, one of those recognizable figures in aviation is planning to raise millions of dollars as he merges his long and short-haul airlines. The result, a single brand under the diversified company called Capital A. Its brands include AirAsia, Move, All In One Travel App, FinTech, BigPay, the logistics venture, Teleport. Tony's with me now. We've much to talk about. And it is good to see you, Tony Fernandez. Thank you for taking time. I just want to begin, before we talk about everything, the Malaysian government's decision, or it looks likely, that there'll be another search for MH370, or could well be, with Ocean Infinity. I assume this is something you would welcome as an aviation leader yourself to get to the bottom of what happened.
Yes, I actually saw the minister yesterday. He came to launch something at our office, and we had a quick discussion. He seems quite optimistic. And I think everyone in Malaysia, and I would imagine the world, wants closure on this. I very much welcome the move, and I applaud the Malaysian government for not giving up.
Now, talking about not giving up, you keep bashing away. Why are you doing this SPAC? Why do you want to be on the US market anyway? You're very successful. You've been in the Asian markets. What is going to the US market going to give you?
Well, Richard, as you mentioned, you know, during COVID, we had to restructure. We had to rebuild. And we went from an airline into five divisions. Our airline, logistics business, which is doing very well, Teleport. A digital business, our OTA, and a fintech, and an aviation services company, which I believe will challenge the Singaporeans in the years to come. Finally, we had probably one of Asia's most valuable brands in AirAsia. And over the years, many people have asked me whether, you know, we would look at doing airlines, even though we weren't interested in going outside of ASEAN, whether we would license our name out for hotels, mobile phones, and the like. And so as part of this restructuring, we thought it would be a great way to monetize our brand. The brand was valued by Brand Finance at over $1 billion. We felt with the geopolitics, it was a good time for Americans to get to know ASEAN better. And we think obviously being in the American market opens up a huge new investor pool for us and potentially our other companies. So the timing was right.
Now, the SPAC is obviously the quicker way to do it than a full IPO, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a certain logistical sense to it. But does it distract your focus when you start to look at the brand and how you can internationalize or further internationalize the brand?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we have five separate management teams now running the various companies. One of the reasons why we took the brand out, apart from the monetization, for shareholders was basically the larger the brand, the better for AirAsia. And we're on this next journey, which I think would interest you, Richard, a lot. We've had some fantastic discussions with Airbus, and we're kind of gravitating towards becoming an Emirates and a Qatar, but with narrow bodies. Airbus have given us fantastic three choices of the A321. There's the Neo. There's the long-range version, which gives you 7-hour range, and then the XLR, which is coming out later this year, which gives you 10 hours. With that, we believe we will, you know, focus on narrow bodies as opposed to the A330 and have substantially lower trip costs and really open up the world to low cost and hence open up the massively. And so part of trying to fly around the world is also to get our brand to be bigger.
Right. Now, would you run those XLRs Would you run them seriously long runs in all economy config?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, Richard. I mean, I think my board shrieked when I said all economy. We're obviously going to run some lopers with Airbus and the team. My heart right now is maybe a few flatbed seats, like JetBlue's kind of what they've done on their 321s. But I feel the majority will be economy seats.
Finally, the sheer demand is there. There's no doubt that we won't even discuss about it. The sheer demand is there. How big can it get in the next few years?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in the right spot. Again, I talk about timing, but for AirAsia, we're in Asia, which has 3 billion people. We're very, very strong in Southeast Asia, which is 700 million people. We have a huge presence in China and India. When you put all those populations together, you've got about 3 billion. But you've also got a rising GDP. ASEAN is becoming the fifth largest economy in the world and the fastest growing economy. So while Europe and America have obviously been ahead of us in aviation, the potential for Asian airlines to grow, and with this wonderful series of aircraft that Airbus have given us, the potential is very large. We have 400 aircraft. One of the things investors have missed out is that we have an order book of 400 planes, of which 75 are financed. We don't have to wait for another 5-6 years. If you place an order now, it's going to take you another 5-6 years to come in. So we're in the right area for growth. We have the right model. We've been through, as you mentioned, hell and back, and are still, you know, aggressively right now back on the path of growth.
Tony, it is good to see you. I'm grateful. Thank you. And I wish you a good morning and a good day as you start your day, sir. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning to you. Bye.
Tony Fernandez joining us there. This is CNN. It's First Move.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.